Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, November 6th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 111, Make a Wish. That's what that means. If it's 111, you make a wish, right? Or is it just 1111?
I'm not familiar with either of the conventions you're referencing. The only 111 I know is, I think, the F-111 Aardvark, which was a rather unsuccessful air-ground weapons platform. But beyond that...
It's 1111. The thing I'm thinking of is 1111. You make a wish at 1111, and then it comes true. In fact, there was just an Important If True that talked about this, but I learned it from an ex in college. None of those wishes came true. So, but you know, it's we can make a smaller wish because it's only 111. My wish is to talk about video games. It's a small wish.
Well, you're really setting this up to succeed.
It's true. It's just you and me today, Rob. Danielle is at the doctor. Patrick is on vacation. We're also recording pretty late, and so while I hope that I get this up on Monday, November 6th, there's a chance it'll go up on Tuesday, November 7th.
But if your podcast is delayed by a day, when you download it, you make a wish.
Right.
And it comes true.
And it comes true, exactly. As long as it's a wish about having a podcast in your ears, and that one will definitely come true. It's funny because if I knew, I think like 20 minutes ago, if I had known that this might slip till November 7th, I might just do that on purpose because it would mean that I would get to talk about a couple of other things. But one of those things, I just got an email that was like, you can go ahead and talk about it. And that is Need for Speed Payback. The new Need for Speed game, which originally had an embargo of November 7th. And then seriously, like a half hour ago, I got an email that was like, the embargo shifted. It's now today. It's today at 6 p.m. Just go ahead and talk about it. So that's a thing. I've been playing Need for Speed Payback. Do you remember what that is?
Yeah, I remember looking at it at E3. And as I understand it, it's another... open world Need for Speed game, this one owing pretty nakedly to the Fast and Furious franchise.
Didn't they get out there and say, like, no, it's not Fast and Furious. That's actually not a great comparison. But it's incredibly...
But it is?
It incredibly is. Like, so it is definitely in the... All right, let's slow down. Let's talk about Need for Speed. I feel like there are two or three different types of Need for Speed.
Oh, don't get me started.
Wait, do you have like a Need for Speed feeling?
I do have.
Do you have a Need for Speed?
Yes, but it has gone unsated, at least by the series, for many a year.
Okay. Do you think it's fair to say that there are kind of two or three types of Need for Speed? There are like driving first, like still arcadey, but like... driving focused Need for Speed games, like ones that are about cars and about like it's car porn and it's driving porn and it's all jacked up and arcadey and a little, you know, spectacular, more spectacular than something like Forza, or it's more like a Forza Horizon than it is it's not like a real Forza, but it's like a Forza Horizon. And then there is the like story driven Need for Speed, the like, what if we talked about criminals and about escaping the police? Is that a fair division in your mind?
Yeah, though even
racing
there,
versus
I would say,
rubbing?
Sort of. So, but I mean, are you leaving it there? Because there's so many more divisions within that. Like, you have the pursuit Need for Speeds.
Right.
Which sort of stem from... Well, so cops were always in Need for Speed. So the original Need for Speed, which I played a lot of, was literally just like...
a 3DO title or a PC title? Is that what that was?
I think it was both. I remember, like, the only reason I think I remember it being for 3DO was briefly their whole, like, sales pitch was they were going to be... like, all new consoles were saying they had the best graphics of that time.
Right.
And Need for Speed did have, for its time, like, it was like you were driving against CD-ROM backdrops of Country Roads.
Right.
And yes. at the time, it was like... incredibly powerful and evocative. And as you're doing these point-to-point races, there would be cops. And if you went speeding past them, as you always did, the cops would pursue you.
Gotcha.
Then Need for Speed 3 comes along, and they're like, man, people loved the cops. And then it became about
Hot Pursuit. That is actually Hot Pursuit, right?
Yeah, that's the first of three Hot Pursuits, I think.
Right, and they're not Need for Speed. Oh, no, the second one is Hot Pursuit 2, and then again in... like 2011 or 2010, they're just Hot Pursuit again.
Yeah.
And you're right, because there's a third. There is a third type, which is like the underground race scene that isn't explicitly about taking down the cops, but it's about like tuning your Honda Civics versus like racing Porsches. Like that's
The second time this series has come back around to Fast and Furious. I just put two and two
together.
It's the third
time, Rob. It's like the fifth time. Like that's the thing, right? Like
yeah.
Was Most Wanted the one that had, like, which was the one that had the FMV? Underground?
No. So Most Wanted, I think, was the next. Most Wanted was, I think, the Criterion one that came out. Was another one that was you were an undercover cop, I think, in New Orleans.
Ooh.
I want to say there was some
Speed undercover.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And there was some breathtaking FMV in that as well. You had that entire, like, you're an undercover cop, which, yeah, now that I think about it, is very vintage Fast and Furious.
Right. Maggie Q, I believe, was in
She that- sure was.
Wow.
And I don't think Gary Oldman was in it, but a guy who was channeling like Gary Oldman's B-movie performances was definitely in it. Like, it was some other actor.
Jessica Alba's brother was in this. That's good. David Reese Snell from The Shield. You know, it's everybody you need. Anyway, this is definitely leaning in that direction. Need for Speed Payback is definitely like, oh man, Fast and the Furious is big. We should do a Fast and the Furious. But I'm not 100% sure they get it. Let me give you the basic setup, both in terms of gameplay and story. You play a crew. You play multiple characters. The kind of lead protagonist is this dude named Tyler, who is incredibly white, but also from the Barrio, which means that's how he says it.
Sorry, he's from where?
The Barrio. He might say Barrio. He's incredibly white. He's like, he's like the race driver. Like, he's like the driver's driver. You know what I mean? And then there's Mac, who is from England, and he moved to America because this is where dirt racing happens. This is really where the desert race, the mountains and this drifting, it all happens here in America in the desert, in their fake Las Vegas. And then there's Jess, who is like a criminal, like getaway driver, and she's the professional, and she doesn't take shit from anybody, Rob, especially not you. But she's actually like incredibly tsundere. Like, she is... she like clearly has a heart of gold and loves the team, but Austin. Doesn't let it. What's up? Did I say tsundere? And now you're like, is this game anime?
No one ever explained to me what tsundere means.
That's it. It's just like,
and I've been faking
like,
it, but like I've never understood what that reference.
That's
means.
What it means. It's like it's someone who has.
It means you're a getaway driver with a.
It means you're a getaway driver with a heart of gold. No, it means you're like. Fine, I'll pick you guys up, but it's not because I like you or anything. It's like, what I mean?
Okay, yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, but I'm only doing it because I'm a professional. And then, like, worrying internally, like, oh no, I hope they don't get into trouble. And, like, that's what it's like.
Like an Integra Helsing.
Yes, exactly. So, that's the basic setup, and it opens with them trying to do a heist. They're trying to steal this special new hyper electric car from a rich gambler who's kind of holding a race, and it all falls apart. obviously they're betrayed by like their four. There's another guy who's like the mechanic. His name is Rav.
Yeah.
And then there's a fifth member, and surprise, the fifth member is up to no good, and you can tell she's up to no good literally immediately. And she screws you all over, and she takes the car, and then it kind of wants to do the Fast and the Furious, like, and then everybody went their separate ways, and you got to bring them back together as like a crew. But like, it only jumps 6 months. And no one's really in trouble. Like, the main dude has been recruited to be a valet driver and a courier for the rich gambler who held the race to begin with. And, like, the drifting guy from England has started doing, like, celebrity ride-alongs where he'll take social media, like, stars and starlets and, like, do drifting with them. And it's, like, it's not good, but it's not like their lives are ruined from this. No one went to prison, you know? But there's a chance, like, it's time to get back at her. It's time to get payback. And again, like, the problem is, like, no one's lives were made that bad. I don't really think it's like payback for the principle of it, not because of any material losses.
Yeah, this isn't like the remake of The Italian Job where, like, Edward Norton literally killed someone's dad.
No, it's not like Fast and the Furious, right? Because in Fast and the Furious, it also comes back down to, like, I can't believe they killed motherfucking, I'm not going to say who died, who I'm still mad about, who I can't believe that they haven't fucking...
Oh, God.
I'm just so frustrated.
Just resurrect that guy. Like,
just bring him back.
God damn it.
There's, like, a bunch of people who they could bring back, honestly, and I would like
Japan is my Mexico speech alone should have been, like, this right, character now is plot armor.
We cannot, yes, agreed, we cannot.
Oh, wait,
do
we don't want to spoil Tokyo Drift?
I'm not spoiling Tokyo Drift or what follows. I'm not doing it. In any case, so with that setup, the goal is to, like, commit a number of heists against this group called The House, which it runs illegal street races in fake Las Vegas, and is kind of going, I guess they might have some other side deals. Like, as I get deeper in, it's like, ooh, what else do they, are they up to?
That's a clever, play on Vegas gambling terms, Austin, because I don't know if you're familiar with this, but, like, there's the saying, you can't beat the house.
You can't beat the house.
Because the house in Las Vegas is the casino.
Uh-huh.
And the odds are forever skewed in their favor.
In the house's favor, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All of the characters have just really bad, like, one word, like, nicknames. It's like Tyler is the racer and Mac is the showman and the guy you work for is the gambler, which is like, no, he owns a casino. He's not a he's
quite the opposite, really.
Yeah, actually he's the opposite. So then what ends up happening is you're in this open world and you kind of go between scripted heist missions, which are the big set pieces, and the kind of open world races, where what you'll need to do is the racing is split into five categories. There's like racing is one of the categories, just like cars that are race cars, right? Just like kind of a general catch-all. Drifting races, off-road races, getaway like races. I forget what those are called. Those are called like, it's not called getaways. It's like low key or like runner. They're runner missions. You're a runner. That's what Jess is. She's actually a wheelman. Is actually what her title is. Her nickname is the wheelman. But she is her races are runner races. And then there's like drag races. And then that might be it. I think also actual drifting, because there's like drifting and also off-road. Anyway, those are split up into different categories because there are different cars in each category. And each category is filled with like not only different cars in those categories, but those cars have different like maximum like output potentials, because this is a loot game. This is a game in which you do a race and then three cards show up on screen and they're face down and you pick one and you flip it over and it's like a you know, a new engine block that is rank 7 instead of rank 3. And it gives you a bonus to your speed or your nitro. And if you match three parts, so it's like it's engine block, it's turbo, it's your ECU, mm-hmm. it's brakes, it's, you know, it's six things, it's the six parts, it's exhaust, you know, the six car parts.
It's a full gear set.
Exactly. And if you match brands, you get bonuses.
No.
So if you have three Outlaw branded pieces, you get a bonus.
Are they real brands?
No, they're fake brands.
Okay.
It's Outlaw and like, I almost said Jinteki, but that is a Netrunner thing. Chidori is one of them. Chidori. I don't think that's real. I think that's a Persona character. and that stuff is like, the numbers go up. If what you care about in a racing game is the numbers going up, Rob, the numbers go up. And in that way, it feels like the sequel to The Crew. In a lot of ways, it feels like a sequel to The Crew. Because The Crew was also taking some Fast and Furious inspiration in that it was a revenge story about cars and gangs and crime. And the thing that The Crew got very wrong is that it never had Fast and the Furious as spectacle. The like heisty missions, the missions that were about doing crime, were just races. There was never anything else going on. And to its credit, Payback has a little bit more. So what happens is you do 4 or 5 of those side races, right? Like you open up in the world and you have to like, oh, we need you to infiltrate these two other gangs. Or like get there. I don't know if it's infiltrate or just kind of like build up rep, I guess. So it's like you have to do 5 races that are off-road races and 5 races that are just regular racing races against these two different gangs who are led by enigmatic leaders. And once you finish both of those, you get the call from the gambler who's like, now it's time to do a real heist mission. And so all the stuff you're doing in those regular races is with the cars that you unlock and upgrade and buy. There are derelicts that you can find in the open world. Like I spent like 30 minutes finding all of the parts to put together a 65 Mustang. And then like you can upgrade it. You can start putting points into it.
Do the derelicts all tend to be like American Graffiti type? Like
I've only found 2 so far, and no. So one of them was a Nissan, one was the Mustang. And the other thing there that's interesting, but also maybe bad, is when you put the derelict together, the derelict can be any of the 5 types, and so you pick which type you want it to be. So for instance, I got that derelict Mustang, and I was like, I really want this to be like my getaway car, and so I made it my getaway car. And the derelicts are like collectibles because they have the highest possible output. They can get up to like rank 500, where everything else only goes up to rank 200, 300, or 400, right? The thing that I ran into is, so I made that car my runner car, which immediately weirdly unlocked Jess as a driver earlier than it would have in the main game. It makes me curious what would have happened if I'd made it one of the other types that I hadn't had yet. So I make it that, but it's like the lowest possible rank. It's rank 100 out of 500, right? Like you start at 100 and then you start working your way up point by point. Like you get a level 7, you know, engine block, and you go up from 100 to 107. It literally is just adding up points, right? And the problem is she had a better runner car already. And so now I spent a ton of in-game currency to try to upgrade this Mustang. I like went broke trying to upgrade the in-game Mustang that I'd gotten, the derelict Mustang, and it's still worse than her default car, and I'm broke now, and the main story needs me to buy a drag racing car, mm-hmm, and an actual drifting car, and like I don't have the money. I have to go grind old things or spend money on loot boxes, which might have currency or car or currency or parts in them. So
one could say you have to gamble.
One could say there's a lot here that I actually like. I completely got off topic, which is the actual heists. So you do those 5 races against those 2 different gangs. You get enough reputation or whatever. It's not a reputation meter. It's just like narratively, you get the reputation you need, and the gambler sends you off on the first heist, which is to steal the car that you originally were trying to steal from him. And I expected it to be another race. And it's a little bit more than that. It's like you have to take out the enemy enforcers who are driving in cars by ramming into them. You have to make sure to like drive up next to the truck. The truck is dropping explosive oil barrels. Like it has the spectacle, right? Jess jumps off the car to like land on the top of the truck. They lean into it. And then like she gets the fast car and it's very fast. And so like I'm a little hopeful for where it goes. I just also don't know that the actual driving is especially good, and I'm skeptical. On paper, I love the notion. I found this old Shelby. I found this old Mustang. I'm making it better. But I hate that I can only drive that car in those events. I hate that I can't bring that car everywhere and try to win in a different car. It seems like it's going to take a lot of time for me to get the cars I want. And maybe more importantly, like, none of the characters are all that likable. The comedy has been super hit or miss. And those are the things that make Fast and the Furious actually good. Like, I love the ridiculous stunts that are in 5, 6, and 7. And 8, is 8 out? Is 8 the most recent one?
Yes.
Fate, the Fate of the Furious? Yeah, okay. But what I really love is those people and those characters and their history. And you can't just fake it. You can't just jump into this was a tight crew and now they're broken up and now they're getting back together. You have to show them as a tight crew first, and it just doesn't do that.
Yeah, I was pretty sure this was not going to be my type of Need for Speed, to be honest. Like, it's definitely a series that has kind of moved away from me. Mm-hmm. In part because I think as they started moving in more of this open world direction.
Right.
All Which the
this
cars
is.
Started
this is like
to
a
feel...
big open world, like there are five kind of subsections of like open world around a core fake Las Vegas city center. So it's kind of like the mountains, the desert, the jungle, not the jungle, but like a kind of more forested area, the suburbs, and then the city. So it is definitely in that open world, burnout paradise-y, but not anywhere near as well designed or memorable. You know, were you a burnout paradise person?
I was.
Do you remember like the turn near where the big windmills are?
Yes.
Yeah. And like, this doesn't have that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's the other thing is like, the desert can have like a strange beauty and there's like astonishing stuff out there. But I think like Burnout Paradise had this weird, you know, you were in this microcosm, biome, I guess the way you call it, right? Like, you know, you could drive out into like rolling countryside and then into like industrial decay and like a glamorous coastline. And I did kind of wonder if the deserts around fake Vegas would start to blur together a little bit.
They do. It's like, oh, well, this is the one that has the dilapidated airfield. This is the one that has some hills and mountains and like a resort or whatever. But like, none of it is cartoonish in the way that Burnout Paradise is, which means it doesn't loan itself to being as memorable. But honestly, none of it's as cartoonish as Fast and the Furious is either. That's a world that only paints in the broadest brushes. And that is part of why it's so memorable. My hope is as the game continues and as you do more of these like main story missions, there will be these big moments with places on the map that will help me remember them and think about them fondly. Though also part of the problem with the main missions I've had so far is that you don't use your main cars in them. They give you cars in each one that I've done so far. It's like, here is the set car for this mission. And that seems to just run directly in the opposite direction of, I'm fixing up these cars. I'm turning this old Buick, which is like one of the starting cars you can pick from. I'm making this old Buick like a dope racer. It is not a thing that then plays into those big missions, which is just kind of also a weird disconnect.
And related to that, like, if you're going to make improving your car that, integral to the game, you need a driving model that at least lets you sort of feel, or at least imagine that you feel, like, a significant difference from some of these upgrades going in.
Yes.
And, like,
yes,
a difference from model to model. And I think, going back, you know, ages, Need for Speed games started to feel like everything was very interchangeable. Their driving model became a lot more arcadey in the way that there's good ways to do arcade handling. It's you know, just cars have like distinctive traits, but everything is a little mm-hmm. bit exaggerated, and you're also mm-hmm. just a little more assisted in pulling off like rad maneuvers.
Right.
But what ended up happening over the course of the series, I felt, was just all the handling became at once too like responsive, but then also like way too prone to just constantly breaking away from you. So you could like put it into, a drift and things like that. And every car has that trait. And after a certain point, it's like, well, this game is just like, you talk about those, like, what is the 15 minutes of fun or that loop. It feels like a lot of the open world Need for Speeds have you just repeat the same 15, 20 minutes of gameplay. and then you change cars, and you do it all again in a different skin, but you've seen it. You saw it in the first 20 minutes.
Right. Well, so the thing that it feels like, to its credit, I will say that the five car type, well, so far I've tried three of the car types. I've tried runner, I've tried off-road, and I've tried just racing or whatever, and those three feel fairly distinct, with runner feeling the least distinct because it's basically just the car you ram police cars with as you try to get away from them. Also, this is a world where no one has guns, right? Like, no crime that we've seen yet has been, like, no one's doing crime outside of car crime, and that's part of the strangeness of what's going on.
To be fair,
right?
That's a huge part of Fast and Furious. Like, the first movie is like,
it's changed,
there's
though.
This gang of criminals.
Yes, 100%.
They're like,
100%.
Were they stealing TVs out of moving trucks?
DVD players from DVD players. Thank you. I just rewatched it last year. But like, by the time you get to the what's his face, the transporter. Jason Statham film, like Fast and the Furious ones, that dude just is a killer. He just kills people. And that raises the stakes and turns it into a proper action movie. But even when you go back to the first Fast and the Furious, like, there's gestures towards violence and towards other sorts of crime that aren't just car crime. Like, it's still like, you know, the backstory with Dom's dad is about violence. And I'm not saying that every game needs to be hyper violent, but like, I need to understand what the house does so that I know if they're bad guys or if they're just like running illegal races. And I'm sure I'll get there, but it's just like, it's very funny to think about how deep into this world you are before, like, no one has pulled a gun on me as I've crashed into 30 cop cars. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's almost utopian. It's almost utopian to think this is a world in which the police are so careful with their gun use that even after a person has taken their perfectly tuned Mustang and flipped over two dozen cop cars, they will not, and even after they've crashed and have like gone into a full stop, and for all, by all means, they should be a perfect, like an open target, nothing. They just wait and they leave the sirens on and they wait for your countdown clock to tick down, because also that's a weird thing. You don't, like, every race still has a timer, even when it's just like, escape the police. It's like, escape the police. But really what we mean is this is a checkpoint race. You have 2 minutes to get to the finish line. It's weird. But the thing I was going to say is that, like, the off-road races do feel different, and the cars do feel different than the racing or the runner ones. And I'm hoping that that's also true for the drag racing cars and the racers and the drifting cars. My hope is that those really do feel different, because even if inside of those, like, car classes, it feels like the same 15 minutes over and over again, at least I'll be able to pivot to a different class and stay fresh. One small thing, and then I'll move on, is that I love is this notion of side bets that you can take. Every race starts with someone being like, not someone, but like a prompt on the screen saying, hey, what if you had to, what if you put, give me $700. You're like, buh, 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 buh. You lose $700, but I'll give you back $4,000 or $2,500 if you hit 10 objects on the side of the road during this race, or if you can stay in the lead for 60 seconds, or if you can make a jump of 127 feet or more. And that's really cool, because each race then adds this like secondary objective where normally it's like, I'm just going to win these races. I'm leveled up enough to do that now. Like, that shouldn't be a problem. But if I'm so committed on like making sure I get 500 yards worth of drifting that I'm going to like be a little more loose in the wheel to make this side bet, then it adds like a little bit of extra risk. And I've actually really enjoyed that feature. I'm going to try to stream this game tomorrow morning so I can show it off a little bit. Definitely worth looking at. And I think, unlike you, I'd always hoped it would be mine, because like my type of Need for Speed, or my type of racing game in general, because I'm definitely a Burnout Paradise, a Forza Horizon, a, you know, open world racing is the type of racing that I enjoy. I have always bounced off of more traditional racing games outside of a few real major exceptions. So I don't know. I'm going to stick with it and see how it is.
Let me know if, like, you hit any really great set pieces. I am curious if that mission structure goes anywhere or if it's going to be variations on like smash the car until the scripted event happens.
That's my fear. Let's take a quick break.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
How are you doing? What are you up to? What have you been playing?
So I have been playing XCOM War of the Chosen. I've finally gotten around to playing that a little bit. I did not like XCOM 2.
Oh, really? Like, full stop?
Yeah. Didn't think it was very good. And part of that was I probably way overestimated my ability at playing XCOM 2 and was just getting wrecked right and left trying to do Iron Man runs. Mm-hmm. Like, even on easier difficulties, it was just so many, like, you'd have these chain reaction failures, right, of, like, the sniper gets mind-controlled, aces two of your squad mates, and it's like, well, you know, just gotta wear that. The other thing I really didn't like was that I just didn't feel the campaign had any kind of interesting structure to it at all. Right. It didn't feel like an insurgency. I thought it was absolutely nuts that the primary way you interacted with the game was via a geographic map, and it was effectively a game without geography.
It never felt like, so for people who haven't played, a lot of people I think probably played the first XCOM and not the second one, and I don't think we talked at length about it the way we probably should have. You're kind of a floating helicarrier. Your base is this giant, like, captured alien ship that you're building out, and you can just kind of fly it from place to place, and nothing ever feels like the original XCOM gives you such a, not the original, but the 2010, 11 XCOM, gives you such a feeling of, like, placeness when it comes to, like, not individual placeness, not like this is Japan, but I know in Japan, the terror level in Japan is too high. Whereas in XCOM 2, I just, like, never felt that, even when I was, like, focused on a specific part of the world map. I never, like, they never felt distinct in any meaningful way.
Yeah, and the other thing is the game unfolds via a series of countdown timers that, like, so you fly your helicarrier somewhere, you park it, you hit the scan button, and then you just sit and you watch this thing spin until whatever event you're trying to trigger triggers. And you'll have multiple of these timers firing concurrently. And so the entire game had this, like, really herky-jerky structure. It was stop, start, commander, there's another message for you. It was like inbox hell was how that game felt. And there wasn't really a payoff for it, I didn't think. Like, as cool as their efforts to make it a little more narrative, to give you the sense of, like, hey, we're getting the band back together and we're really taking to these aliens, it never, because of that structure, it never really felt like it was organically building toward anything.
Right.
It just felt like I could only, there was a clear, like, timeline and progression that, like, the game was going to unfold according to, and it was hidden, but you absolutely had to, like, hit the checkpoints.
Right.
Otherwise, you were hosed.
How do you think War of the Chosen has addressed that stuff?
In some ways, there's some things it doesn't address at all. You know, that structure that I just outlined is fundamentally unchanged, mm-hmm. but there's more interesting stuff happening within it. And I think the thing that they've done that really adds a little more variety and a lot more tension to the game, although it makes Iron Man, I think, even more impossible and daunting than it was before.
Yeah, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. They introduced these special, like, hero units for the Advent. Those are your alien adversaries, the Chosen, and they are these three, like, supervillain archetypes that have a chance of popping up during missions and have special abilities that make them especially deadly in different ways. They have their own weaknesses. Right. There are certain things you need to note about them, but
those strengths and weaknesses are pulled from a hat, right? It's like very Nemesis system light. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not, because I thought, my ability to read narrative consistency and everything, I guess, is unmatched, because, like, I was like, oh, yeah, of course it makes sense that the assassin would be weak against the Reapers, assassins themselves.
I'm pretty sure, now I'm just double-checking, because maybe I'm just a liar, maybe, I remember reading that, and now I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just totally wrong, maybe that is... No, weaknesses are procedurally generated. They are.
That's 100%. Really cool.
Because mine was for the assassin. So the three archetypes for these like superhero or supervillain chosen characters are like the assassin who goes into stealth. The like I forget what's the magic one, the warlock.
Yeah,
and then the hunter who is like. I always confuse the hunter and the sniper. The assassin is like closer range, goes in and out of stuff.
The problem that they have is they all feel like assassins because they're all elusive as hell. Because like the main thing is they have a ton of action points and they can basically like appear, kick your ass, and then run away. And you have to chase them if you want to bring them down. And you really have to chase them because if you let them just run around, they will whittle your squad down. Like it's very Predator. It's like you're playing
XCOM
really and the Predators
good
in the
comparison.
Map.
Yes, 100%.
Well, so even like their visual design.
Yeah, totally. They all have like they're all aliens with dreadlocks. Like they really truly are. And like laser cannons, right?
Yeah.
And like like curved blades. So the one that I had, my first assassin encounter, she had two really rough things. One, the things she was weak to were whatever the kind of reformed aliens called.
Yeah, the skirmishers.
The enclave, the skirmishers. We'll get to that in a second probably, right? But they're kind of weak to a sub-faction that you can recruit from called the skirmishers. And that dude is like pretty close range. And when I got into my final... like the combat encounter with her, he had one health left. So I was like, well, he's never gonna be, I'm never putting him anywhere near her. Two, she had a bonus, and the bonuses are also procedurally generated, and so these are things that are like the assassin actually always starts with this one, which is Shadow Step, which is you cannot they don't get maybe it was a different one. I'm reading it, I'm like, wait, is this right? No, she had a thing that was like, oh, she just completely ignores Overwatch mode.
Yeah, no, like, she always does then. I think that is consistent.
Okay.
Or so maybe it's it proc twice.
Yeah, who knows? There are strengths and weaknesses are proc gen. It is like a light Nemesis system in that regard. It's also a light Nemesis system in the regard that like they have cultural memory, not cultural, they have individual memory. They will remember how you beat them before and adapt to address it. They will call back to things that you've done in the past. And they kind of, they'll do things like kidnap your people. Which happened to me the first time she was around.
This is another good addition, is that you have this like idea of rescue missions.
Yes.
And it's not, they are not like scripted events, I think. Like you can like, okay, so the thing about these characters is they generally don't kill your troops outright. Right. What they do is they incapacitate them, and the odds are good now you'll have to leave them behind.
Right.
So the thing that you have happening with these missions is that like you'll be lucky to escape, but maybe somebody was left behind, and then you got to devote resources and time to like finding where that person is being kept, and then you have a prison break mission. Yeah. I guess that's the other thing that I'm really liking about War of the Chosen. It feels like they're doing a lot more with the stealth versus revealed status than they were in the first.
The prison breaks are so especially that too. Oh, God. Because it's just so, like, again, I've only done one or two of those at this point. I haven't gone back to this in probably 2 months now. But the first time I did it, it was this, like, slow, careful move through, like, it split up into, like, three sub-teams. Put them, like, kind of spread them through this prison facility. Got them deep in without being seen. One of the new subclasses that you can have, we've gestured towards them already. There are these three factions you can recruit from that are insurgent factions that are already existent insurgent factions in the world. and you can kind of get higher reputation with them, and then they'll give you troops and the technology and stuff like that. And one of them is built for stealth, where members of that group can drop, can shoot and remain in stealth, unlike everybody else. It's not like they go loud and that's it. Or even once things are loud, they can dip back into stealth with some of their higher level abilities. And like breaking in, and it's like, all right, it's time to pull the fucking trigger. It's time to go loud. Feels so good.
Yeah, and like in the launch game, it really did feel like, okay, you were stealth, then you encountered the thing you were there to do, and then the fight started. And really, it could only work one way. And that was, like, you broke stealth, and then the mission was just going to be way harder. And it was just, like, kind of a one-way street. It was kind of punishing. Yes. Now, it very much feels like you're making that decision to, if you can avoid detection, your first turn or two of battle isn't a fight. It's a murder.
Yes, totally.
And so you'll have these great moments of, like, you'll have two groups, because enemies like will cluster on patrol routes. And occasionally, you'll have like a super cluster where you have like, there's two separate patrols of like three and four aliens. But for this turn or so, for some reason, they're all in the same area.
Which never do once things are fighting, like once you're actually in open combat, because they're too smart for that, because explosives are too dangerous.
They're smarter than I am. They always stay out of grenade. They're never like, it is very rare you find two enemies within the span of one grenade's blast radius. But like, there was this one battle, it was going to be really lopsided if we didn't handle this right. And then the two groups were all clustered together, and I had a heavy with a flashbang. And so the first turn, like, seven enemies were disoriented. And
that's so good.
Yeah. And so, like, they're blinded. They're running around. All my soldiers are in reaction fire. So the first turn, just, like, bodies are dropping right and left, and they still can't hit shit. So, like, I've got my heavy just walking up and, like, putting shotguns into faces and, like, taking people down. It's great. Mm-hmm. And then this game is just much better at generating certain dramatic moments. And I want to tell you a little story.
Please.
It was my first Advent Black Site mission. So the overarching plot element is there's this Project Avatar. When it's revealed, you lose the game. If they're allowed to complete it, you lose. You go to secret facilities and you basically like blow them up, sabotage the project. You buy yourself more time. The first of these missions, it's a stealth mission, and quick shout out here. The procedural generation on a lot of these maps is incredible. This one might have been scripted, but in general, the battle spaces they are giving you to play with in War of the Chosen feel lifelike. They feel distinctive. They feel like they're handcrafted, but they're not.
There are these, like, I really love some of the cityscapes, especially.
Yes.
Because one of the other new, like, first of all, a thing we should just say about War of the Chosen is that it feels so comprehensive of an update. It feels like XCOM 2.5. It really, really does. And one of the other new features is that there are these zombie characters, faction. Right, exactly. Yeah. This is what I'm saying. Because, like, they roll those out in the same mission that they first roll out the Chosen in. And the sub-factions, like, that mission is just like, hey, this is a new game. There's all this new stuff. And those zombies are cool because I think I've talked about this in the podcast before, but when you kill one, if you successfully get the hit, it doesn't cost your action, so you can kind of chain together these kills. But you fight those in these big abandoned urban environments. And XCOM 2 already had urban environments that were like where the aliens had kind of taken over. It's kind of like cyberpunk or like a kind of oppressive sci-fi like mega cities, but these are these like the moment everything went bad, you know, the dinner is still on the plate, you know, in the apartment, and like moving through the downstairs, moving through the department store, and then climbing the fire escape and going down the long hallway past the locked apartment building or the locked apartments or whatever. That stuff is all so evocative, and it gets out what you said before. I mean, all of these things do, which is XCOM 2 War of the Chosen does make you feel like you're fighting an insurgence war and not just like a stand-up gunfight. That's so much better. So tell me your story. Sorry.
And just quick thing. Yeah, the levels feel so much more lifelike. It feels like there's a lot new like textures and items in the world, not just in the cityscapes, but like refugee camps seem better realized. Yes, I had this amazing gun battle trying to protect these refugees during a retaliation mission where I had to rush to a church where refugees were just being massacred by Advent. And like we burst in through a wall that's been blown open and like start basically like brawling in the pews. It was incredible.
That's so good. My first refugee. This is the thing that's so good about this game is I can tell you months later what my first refugee mission was like. And the thing that was amazing about it, they fucking kicked ass, Rob. They did not miss a shot. They were like ready
to
go.
They were so brave.
I'm like still impressed. Like, I wish I could have just recruited right from those refugees and been like, you know what? Hop on this helicarrier. You don't need this refugee camp anymore. You're all going to live with me. All right, Smith, put this armor on. You're with XCOM now. Like, it was such a cool mission. Ugh. Okay, anyway, you had a bigger story I think you were going to explain.
Yeah. So it's this first mission where we got to break into the Advent facility and get the Who's a MacGuffin.
Right, of course.
And it's pretty extensive. Like, there are a lot of places where it feels like, is this where I break stealth? Like, is this? And I was really aggressive about trying to avoid that first shot. Because, like, it's a big facility. There's a lot of dudes around it. Mm-hmm. The moment the fight started, it was going to snowball really, really quickly. So, like, get everyone into place. Basically, we've gone all the way around the level. We are actually approaching the objective from behind by approaching it through, like, this motor pool. And so the fight starts off with a really cool move. My Reaper character, in addition to being, like, super stealthy and having the ability to go back into stealth, she also has this thing called Remote Start, which allows her to blow up environmental objects. Mm-hmm. And so the way this fight starts is, so like a bunch of characters in Overwatch, I take a 100% sniper shot with somebody else. It kills somebody. You get the whole animation. Everyone's like scattering for cover. And this giant mech like moves over by this like power generator. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is Christmas morning. And the remote start like just blows the shit out of it. You know, clean house. And then immediately after, like, we've wiped out this first wave, but immediately after, the assassin shows up. And I'm like, well, we're off to a pretty good start here. This is going pretty well. And then the guards are showing up, and then the assassin is starting to phase in, phase out, and it's just, like, cutting people down. And I can't react because these guards are still all around. They're in Overwatch. So if I go chasing after the assassin, they're going to start, like, scoring shots.
Yep.
But in the meantime, I've got people disoriented, stunned. I've got a bunch of people hiding in a Overwatch position. I've accidentally lined them up. Turns out the assassin has this, like, wave ability that she sends, like, a disorientation wave through down that, like, row and, like, disorients everybody. And so it gets real bad real fast. I've got one specialist who has the ability to remove negative status effects. And so she is just frantically trying to like get the squad back. Oh yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It is amazing. It's all going wrong. And like the other thing this game really forces you to do, there's no more saving resources for a rainy day. If you got it, you use it. I do not finish battles with a grenade left.
No, like, totally.
Take that cover down, take the shots, do whatever you need to do. Ceilings are falling in. Oh, yeah, this is a three-story building, by the way. So, grenades are firing off everywhere. Supports are getting blown out. Building is burning. Ceiling panels are starting to cave in. It's just incredible. And then, at one point, the assassin, I see where she goes. She ducks in this little guard shack to hide. And I've got a bunch of characters in position, but she's like in invincible cut. Like, we can't even get line of sight on her. One grenade left.
Yes.
Blew the walls down. Suddenly, she is completely exposed and has the high to hit percentage from like four different angles.
Right.
And she just gets ruined.
Nice.
But the great thing is, then we get the MacGuffin. And you need to go to the extraction zone. And one of my characters is down for the count.
Fuck.
And so what ends up happening is I race my healthy squad members to the extraction zone, because no sooner has that popped than a flare comes down, and that's where Advent reinforcements are going to be landing.
Which is also a great thing, just in general, XCOM 2.
Yes.
One of the things I love is, one of the things I like in video games, one of the things I love in tactical RPGs and in tactics games and in strategy games, anything that is like, I have troops on a field, is soft timers. I really don't, this is the thing I discovered via Invisible Ink that I loved. In early versions of Invisible Ink, I think back when it was still Incognita, there were really harsh penalties for being spotted and being on, like, being, you know, not getting away from the floor, not leaving the floor and going to a different floor of the, like, big corporate building that you were in, infiltrating. And that's still true in Invisible Ink now. But at the time, the thing that, like, they were so fierce about deploying new reinforcements that you could try to hold your own and force your way, like have the gunfight and get through that way. But, it would force you to be even more clever. And the reinforcement system in XCOM 2 is very similar. It's not like, you know, for most missions anyway, it's not like, oh, you spent 12 turns, there was a 12-turn limit, you lose. It's more like when you hit turn 12 or when the, whenever, like, not the wanted meter, but the, whatever the thing is,
yeah,
like, hits a certain point, they start bringing in more people. And, like, that's not a hard failure. You know, it's not even like necessarily that you're going to lose anything, except it means you're going to have to be a little bit more clever. You're going to have to be a little bit more, you're going to have to spend your resources more smartly, because having an extra three grunt troops, like, they're not special, they're not even great troops, but it's three more guns pointed at you. And they do the so smart thing of the, like, the flares landing on the ground, right, like, to mark, yep, where they're going to come in. And it's, again, it's so evocative. Like, I it's evocative is a term I think I probably overuse, but the heart of the term is so important to me in video games. The thing that a game can do when, with very little, it can make your hair stand on end, or it can make you understand the gravity of a moment in just the blink of an eye, is the equivalent in gaming for me of a well-composed shot in a film, or the rising of an orchestral crescendo of just like, ah, shit, like, here we are, and seeing those little, it's like, and then, like, an outline appears on the ground where in I know the second I hit end turn, there are going to be three more fucking alien soldiers ready to kill me.
Yep.
It's so good at communicating that they're coming for you and that they won't stop. Anyway, yeah. Again, I hijacked this again. So that happens for
so
you.
The red flare drops and it's basically on top of my LZ. Like, reinforcements are going to be landing on my extraction zone, basically. And I have...
And you're carrying a guy at this point?
Yeah. Four soldiers, yeah. No grenades left.
The person carrying the person can't fight. Use their main weapon at... Can they drop him and fight? And, like, drop him and use a pistol or something?
They can, but I'm, like... I'm not sure that's a free action. Like,
right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
I don't think it is either. Yeah.
I think if you put them down, you're going to have to spend the next turn picking them back up as an action. So I race everyone out to where the Advent landing zone is going to be and, like, set up everyone in Overwatch positions, and, like, right, lagging far behind is a specialist now with no heal kits left, and she is carrying our assault trooper in a fireman carry, and these waves of Advent troops keep stepping off their chopper.
Right.
And the first wave is, like, easy, right? Like, three guys come down, they're in Overwatch crossfire, they just get blown to shit, but one gets through. And he's wounded, but he's there. Right. And then the next turn, more dudes drop. And it's a more serious squad. Like,
yes,
they have a priest with them, and he is dangerous in his own right, but can also provide, like, hero buffs to enemy troopers. So, like, if this guy gets going, things start to snowball fast. And it's just this amazing, like, you've got my specialist, like, racing toward the LZ, and my soldiers are fighting this, like, losing battle. Like, the cover is being destroyed by gunfire. Right. Like, their positioning is starting to fail. People are running out of ammunition. Like, it's you have to take an action to reload.
To reload, yeah.
And that means, like, you can either shoot or move. And if you're a sniper, you actually can't use your main weapon if you don't have both your actions.
Right.
So things are getting desperate. Like, you know, people are, you know, hanging out in open covers. They can reload, and like, you're staking everything on that like 72% shot. You know, that my sniper is like stepping out of cover and using her fast hands ability to like get off a free pistol shot action and like executing people. And it is just incredible. Like, you know, I'm imagining it like, you know, Mark Knopfler's Brothers in Arms is starting to play, right? It's like, you know, somebody rushes into the LZ, drops the wounded trooper, and it's like, all right, everybody go. And then I have to, like, disengage from this entire shit show. And, like, one person, we have to, like, can't make it in one turn, so we have to, like, do this collapsing withdrawal to get her out.
Right.
And it was just, like, managed to escape with everybody. Everyone finished that battle gravely wounded.
Yes, of course.
But
of course.
It was like everything happened in that mission. Like, every single thing that could have happened basically did.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is an incredible, like, narrative event in my story that was largely driven by the systems they introduced with this expansion.
Yep. And those systems are just like, they're building on, like, it's one of those rare things where I am with you that I kind of bounce off of XCOM 2 when it first came out. What this revealed was that the core combat simulation in that game was fine. That the structure around it didn't have enough. There weren't enough hooks. There weren't enough, you know, really clever things. There weren't enough. There wasn't enough of the world in the structure around.
Yeah.
Doing a collapsing withdrawal. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's so nice that they figured out how to build something around it that underscored what was already kind of hidden inside of that core loop, and like lifted it up to kind of communicate that big theme, the theme of being an insurgent, you know, a group of insurgents fighting against an oppressive regime. It's so much better, you know, it's so much better realized in War of the Chosen now. I think partially that also goes to just, like, flavor. I think that I've only met two of the new factions, of the kind of sub-factions, the other insurgent groups. But, and this is a small thing, the fact that there are the skirmishers who are advent soldiers, who are, like, the half-human, half-alien hybrids, who are resisting, means so much to me in my own version of the storytelling in this game. I've always had a weird thing with XCOM, which is, like, it can be so easy to fall into, like, the Warhammer 40K fuck all Xenos thing. Like, the only good Xeno is a dead Xeno. All glory to the human empire and the god emperor. And, like, that's always been such a careful line between role-playing sci-fi fascism and, like, wanting to play a really good sci-fi tactical video game, that it's always been like, I'll play this game because it's really good, but I really wish there was some of the background lore made its way into the gameplay a little bit more, where, like, the basic fiction of XCOM is that the intergalactic empire you're fighting is bad and has enslaved a bunch of the other races that you fight. Like, a bunch of their units are, like, genetically modified versions of cultures that they have smashed and kind of assimilated, right? They're almost Borgish in that way. And it's so cool, and it helps me somehow to just have this group of skirmishers who are like, no, we're not cool with this, and we're going to fight back. And being able to work alongside non-human characters is, like, it completely sates that, like, weirdness for me. And also, they have, like, a scorpion hook, and they can, like, they have a grapple hook up to high places, or like, do the scorpion get over here on an enemy to bring them up close, and then do, like, a predator claw uppercut. It's great. They're really fucking good.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. It reminded me a lot of Falling Skies, if you ever watched that show, any.
A little bit.
Yeah, the show turns kind of good, and then I gather turns kind of bad. and is maybe never great. But one of the, it's got this cool structure of basically like there's all these alien enemies in the first season that you think those are the aliens who just took over. And then somebody points out, like, it's kind of weird that the aliens built robots that don't look anything like them. Right. Like, it's kind of weird that, like, these insectoid aliens built bipedal robots that have, like, really long, lanky frames. Mm-hmm. Weird, huh? And then at the end of the season, it's revealed that, like, oh, yeah, there's this, like, you know, race that is enslaving and, again, like, modifying the people that they enslave. And it is cool to see, like, the skirmishers basically being like, oh, yeah, this was done to us involuntarily. We were forced to become war criminals. We are now aware of that. And we're going to get payback.
Yes, totally. Totally. I really like it a lot. This is going to make me – I'm going to play some of this game tonight, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah, you should. You should. It's a much more complete XCOM 2.
Yes, totally. I'm excited now. What I'm going to do actually is first I'm going to finish another game that I've been playing, and I'm going to hit this pretty quick because we're running late already. So I grew up liking football a whole bunch. I played football until like eighth grade or something, right? Like Pee Wee and then whatever.
You got out when the getting out was good.
I got out before.
I started in high school.
I got out before. I got to high school and was like, I could play football. No.
My graduation from football was knee surgery. So,
see, this is that happened to you. It happened to my friend Art. Like, I'm so glad I got out when I did. But I still liked football. I was still like, you know, every Sunday I'd go to my dad's house and we'd watch the games or like obviously big Super Bowl stuff. Like, I followed the Eagles. I've been to a billion Eagles games. And so this year, it turns out at some point I fell off, right? At some point, my concerns around concussions, around, lasting brain damage, around the politics of the league, around so many things, got to the point where I was having a hard time watching football regularly. I would still watch it for the Super Bowl. I would still watch it if I was at a friend's house. And, like, I wasn't walking around judging people who were still watching it. We do a lot of things. I eat meat. I've said this before. Like, I don't think I have an ethical argument for eating meat. I am not good enough as a person right now to stop eating meat. And so I'm not going to judge someone who watches football, you know. I'll probably eat meat tonight. I'll probably get something with meat in it tonight.
Hang on, can I get on football just a quick second here? It's second. I'm lying. But, okay, so, like, yeah, I started to have the same problems with football. And actually, the whole, like, the Texans owner being like, can't have the inmates running the running the prison. That may have been, like, I've not watched a game since that point because I was like, you know, fuck these white supremacist billionaires. Yep. I might actually be unable to continue this, but we'll see.
Yes. But, so that's where I was, too. And then the Eagles are having an incredible fucking year. Wentz is having an incredible year as quarterback. New talent is hitting the field. And, like, all my Twitter is on Sundays is seeing the Fly Eagles Fly hashtag to, like, 7-1 or something. They haven't been this good since, like, early Andy Reid, McNabb era. And I was like, I should boot up Madden. I should take a look at that story mode. Because I had seen a little bit of that at E3. Thought it was interesting, but didn't ever get around to playing it. And so I was up until very late last night playing the Madden story mode, filled with like a weird anxiety, just generally, because it's been a weird anxiety inducing year. But even with the way, it's so weird. So, it's just such a weird story mode. It alternates between truly touching and kind of offensive. So it's called Long Shot, and it is a single player story mode, sort of, I guess, like what you would find in the NBA 2K series, sort of like, I mean, more closely like the stuff that was in FIFA last year and this year, though I've played neither. The Alex Hunter stories. So in this, you play a guy named, Devin Wade, who is it starts with you as a little kid, right? You and your best friend, Colt Cruz, a.k.a. the Cruise Missile, playing football or you know, playing football the way children play football with their parents in the front yard, right? The dad is kind of playing all around defense and kind of protecting the pass while you play the quarterback and you throw the ball to your friend. And it's shot like a Terrence Malick film, right?
Oh my God.
Dude, I think it's ugly. Like, I think that the models are, I think this is a team that has never made a world before and has always just made football stadiums.
But how's the lighting?
Bad.
Damn
but
it.
The composition is fantastic. Like, grass behind a barbed wire fence and then like people playing football, like the lead character being lifted up by his father and you know, my boy, and throw it up in the air and like, I'm so proud of you, you know, like that stuff works so well. And the basic pitch on the game is actually like, the premise is so strong. You go from that to seeing kind of a cut, it opens up with like 20 minutes of cutscene that you're very minimal interaction, and the basic premise is like, you're this incredible player who goes on to college and in your freshman year is a starting quarterback at UT and then just falls the fuck apart because your father dies in a car crash and you're an orphan and you're just depressed and your dad was the only person you trusted to really take care of you. And then you disappear for a few years and now you're back and you're going to the regional combine with your buddy Colton. Like are basically going to this combine, and while you're there, you're scouted not by a team, but by a TV producer who wants to launch a show called Long Shot, in which they basically pick a person who then they track as they train to be drafted in the next year. You know, one of these long shots who is someone who like, you know, didn't get drafted coming out of college or got drafted then dropped out of the, you know, didn't stick around, or, you know, what was cut from a team and is now trying to come back in or whatever. And so the basic story is like a lot of the stress around being around TV crews and not being media trained, the depression about your dad, the kind of tense relationship with your best friend who is rooting for you, but also is sick of your kind of self-doubting bullshit, because like you're really talented but also you're really talented and also kind of selfish but in a way that's like kind of hard to pin down, and there's some really strong moments, and also it like falls into one of the most pernicious stereotypes in football that I've written about before. Like when I wrote about Race and Animal Crossing like 4 years ago, I spent a lot of time writing about Randall Cunningham, who was like my idol growing up as a football player, even though I played defense and he was an offensive player. Obviously he was a quarterback for the Eagles in the late 80s, early 90s. Cunningham was always framed, and not just Cunningham, a lot of Black quarterbacks, mm-hmm. Warren Moon, like so many Black quarterbacks. I mean, for years, there were not Black quarterbacks because the theory was to be a quarterback means you have to be intelligent, not athletic, smart. You have to be a team leader. You have to understand formations. You have to understand play calling. You have to read the field. Quarterbacks are management. Exactly. Running backs are labor. Wide receivers are, he's so fast. All he has to do is run that route, Rob. And then he can catch the ball and run it in for a touchdown. And that is like, that was the divide. And so people like Randall Cunningham and Warren Moon, I mean, you can even go back to, you know, non-quarterbacks with regard to this. You know, if you watched some of the, what was the O.J. Simpson documentary series 2 years ago?
Oh, Made in America?
Made in America even gets into O.J. as managing his Blackness nationally.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Completely, right? Like, in terms of trying, he's not Black, he's O.J., right? Like, that is like an almost classic line at this point. And partially that is about trying to dodge the stereotype. And this game just falls right into it, Rob, in the worst fucking way. Like, it sets you up as being, on paper, all right, so one of the main conflicts in the second half of the game is that you just can't get your head around formations. You just, what's an eye formation? I don't understand. I've never read a play, I've never called a play in my life.
Yeah.
To the point, Rob, and I'm going to spoil a minor thing here, which is like, there was a point where your white best friend is like, well, you know, down in Tennessee, what they did with Cam Newton, or Carolina, where's Cam at?
Yeah, he's in Carolina.
You know, they just They simplified the play calling for him. They made it so he didn't have to learn all this complicated stuff. And like, there's literally a montage of your white coach and your white best friend dumbing down football for you.
They blindside you?
Yes, it's fucking bad, man. It's like, and it doesn't work because the story is that you were this incredible high school quarterback who moves into college. And like, they kind of say like, oh, well, when I was in college, they just showed me a symbol on the sidelines and said, like, do this play. And I didn't know how to read the defense. No one ever taught me. But like, he's not presented as an unintelligent character. Otherwise, they set him up as being a carpenter. Like, he'd gone away to the army where he'd become a carpenter. Like, he did things in his life that required intelligence. And it would be one thing if they were really trying to sell you on he is a competent player who, because of the constraints, because of trying to turn, you know, become a pro quarterback during a reality TV show, just can't keep up with the pressure or something. But it's literally not that. It's literally your coach at one point tells the executive producer he wants to pick the other guy, the white quarterback, because the other quarterback is smarter than you, right? And like, understands it. It's not about your arm, it's about your mind. And it gets stuck because the executive producer is like, it, you know, that I can't even pronounce that white guy's name, basically, right? Shmizeski? What is it? I don't know how to pronounce that.
That's cool.
It's bad. It's like fucking bad. And it's really weird because it is. This is also a game in which a black character talks about how they don't want to deal with you anymore because they have to go watch Empire. The new episode of Empire is on. It's like, one of the things that works super well about this game, or about this story mode, is that it exists in the real world. Sort of. Like, there are references to real things, right? Like, at some point, somebody says, that's what Twitter is for. You know, like, it's just like, oh, wow, this is like, okay, like, we're really in the world right now. And then just this one big blind spot. And then like, in general, one of the things that's weird is there's like, it's filled with country music. You're a black kid from Texas. And it feels like your blackness outside of this one negative stereotype just doesn't exist, right? Like, it is this sort of like American like movie black, where like, if it's not a movie about race, then it's just a token black character.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's never dealt with in any meaningful way. And yet, when the lead character, or I guess, sorry, his father, is played by Mahershala Ali. And when he like lifts you as a little kid up and like says, my boy, like, that's my dad. Like, I just see him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. When you're looking over the pictures of your family in your home, you know, bedroom, like, when you're seeing Devin Wade, you know, remember being a high school player and seeing his dad on the sidelines, like, all of that does reach into this deep soul of black American identity. Specifically this like parental, this like father son thing that I can like so clearly see my own life. It's so rare that I see this part of my experience of blackness in any media, let alone in a video game. And so it's just been whiplash moving between those quiet moments of like, you know, there's a moment where you end up going back to your dad's grave or to like where the accident happened. And it was just like so deeply touching. And then the next scene is like back to this really ridiculous like old stereotype about black quarterbacks, and it's like so frustrating because they're so close. Rob,
does the character, like, I remember years ago hearing about like that there was a network of black quarterbacks. It was almost like a support group, because being a black quarterback in the NFL or at any level, but like, it fucks with your head in ways that like your white counterparts don't experience. Like, I think there were stories about like, you know, these guys would be like, you know, you'd be having, you know, Dante Culpepper, like getting calls from like Warren Moon, who was out of the game by that point, but just being like, you know, so like talking through like what you're dealing with, right? The things that you're going to be scrutinized for that, like, you know, a white quarterback can miss a throw. Yeah.
The Field Generals is what they called the group, which was literally a group of former black quarterbacks who got together to serve as like a support group for young black quarterbacks. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Does the game acknowledge that like there is this fucked up double standard and your character is aware of it? Oh, shit.
Not at all. Not at all. Like, there's none of it. He's just like, I'm too dumb to put this together. It's too hard for me.
Oh, God.
I can't do it.
Does he go full Hayseed?
Like, it's close. Like, in those moments, Rob, it's very close to, like, a second ago. Like, the next scene in some of these cases is, like, him making high-level decisions about who should stay and who should go on the production team for the TV show. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He isn't presented as being this sort of, like, undereducated character. He isn't incompetent, except his brain just doesn't work with football. And it's so frustrating.
So the thing that I am kind of curious about as well is, like, is it fulfilling a tutorial function and that's what makes it awkward? Because like playing
not, because a lot of the shit isn't like it's not. So like, I mean, that's one of the funniest things.
You're not actually being taught to read defenses.
You're being taught what reading defense is, right? You're being taught a lot of the gameplay in this mode is not playing football. A lot of it is like mini games. So like some of them are literally like shooting galleries where you're throwing a football at targets, you know.
Yeah.
But other ones are things like there's a play calling drill where your coach will say into his headset, he'll say like I formation X go or I formation benches X go Y slant Z hook or something. And then you just pick multiple choice to rebuild that play, right?
Yeah.
There are other moments where the coach will be like, all right, I'm going to bring up the a picture. Point at your hot route receiver. Tell me which of these people on the thing is your hot route receiver. Tell me which of these things is like, what would the play option look like on this play? And again, you're like picking from a list basically. And even when you get that right, it comes, the plot line is he doesn't get it. Do you know what I mean? Even when you say you get it. You know, which one of these is
so it's totally on rails. Like, there is no way to have your character get it.
Right. Well, like, there's one question I got where literally the question, it was like, which personnel group is this? And the answers were like 11 question mark, 55 question mark, 22. Like, it was like, literally the question marks were written into the thing. And there was a character in the previous scene who was like, listen, if you don't know the answer, don't guess. And so I was like, all right, I'm not going to guess. And the coach was like, I can't believe you didn't know that. And it's like, fucking, it's because here's the other side of this. When I was 16 and not playing football, I could tell you all of the formations the Eagles ran because I loved football. And this is a character who loves football. It's what he says again and again is like, football is like the thing that I like. Why am I here is because I want to play football because I grew up playing football with my dad. I love my dad. I love playing football. It's what my identity is. It's what I love more than anything else in the world. It's what I feel good doing. And I just don't buy the notion that someone who loves football that much wouldn't know what the fucking I formation is or what a single back formation is or what the shotgun formation is. Like, I don't, it's implausible, right? And so it's just like, it feels so, it's the biggest misstep they could have made in what has otherwise been, and I'm still enjoying it. Like, I'm still excited to see where it goes. I want to see what the finale is. Like, I'm going into the finale now. It's all building to this game against other up-and-coming, you know, long-shot players and former NFL players who are kind of being put on a team. There's some jokes that really miss. I think that the shitty executive producer character is bad. Is like, he's just like too hateable, you know? He's like a little bit too on the nose. But the moments where it shines are so unique because we don't get a lot of mundane storytelling in games. We don't get a lot of just like, oh, it's America and this thing is happening and it's not about shooting anybody. Well,
and sports are so fertile for it too.
Yes, like, yes, totally.
The illusion that it's the level playing field, the fact that it's about like the promise of youth and the reality of adulthood.
Yes. Like, dude, I'm incredibly critical of American foreign policy, of the way that America uses its armed forces, like deeply, deeply, deeply. There's a sequence in this game where you bring Dan Marino, who's become a sort of mentor character to you in the final half of the game, to your old army base in Dubai, where you introduce him to your old CO, who is he'd been in college, he'd been a kicker, but he was just never good enough. He just never could get out of like, he might have been like double A, you know, he is like, yeah. He's never going to go pro. And there's just really touching, you end up doing like a scrimmage game. There's a bunch of scrimmage games. That's the other thing. It's like on top of the multiple choice stuff, on top of the shooting galleries with footballs, there are like, all right, we're going to play 7-on-7. First downs are every 15 yards, or if there are no first downs, you have to score a touchdown to within four downs. It's kind of like a nice light arcadey mode, which is kind of cool. But there's a moment where you bring Dan Marino to Dubai and like introduce him to all the, you kind of like go with the film crew, like, this is what I was doing when I left college. I came here, I joined the army. I didn't know what else to do. My dad had died. I didn't have any opportunities, so I joined the army. I became a carpenter for the army because, of course, they want to make sure that you are going to be a character who could not be involved with any like terrible American wrongdoing, right? Like, your character is never pictured holding a gun. You build things. That's what your character does. You do the scrimmage game. At the very end of it, you instead of winning by touchdown, you like call out your old CO. You call him out to kick the final field goal. And like, again, fuck the way America uses its armed services. You know, there is a terrible history. For as far back as you want to go, it has been bad. But that moment works so well because in very brief moments, it sketches who your CO is and like how he encouraged you. It sketches Dan Marino as this guy who is, and like maybe this is to the game's credit, Dan Marino comes out and is like, listen, fucking go play football. Like, it's important for you to learn the routine. It's important for you to understand the system and what the formations are and how to read a defense and all of that. But all of that will come from you going out there and playing football. Like, Marino's entire arc is like the guy who's like, remember how you used to play in the playground? You got to need a little bit of that. When the going gets tough, when you're really out there, you have to call the play that you could feel in your gut is right. And so like, it does kind of come back to that a little bit, but it still doesn't quite.
But they set the bar too low, and yes, the reaction exactly. is too naive.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly. Like, he comes across as actually a little naive. Like, he really does come across as like, yeah, but you're Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you can call it from the gut because you're Dan Marino. No one ever said you didn't understand the system. You know.
Yeah.
So it's setting up this like whole big finale that seems kind of interesting. That's going to be around like, you're playing this game and you're trying to make sure you get drafted. But I've read that they are also tracking behind the scenes another player to see if they get drafted based on how you play with them. There's some cool stuff there. And I just wish it didn't have this one really terrible blemish, because otherwise I would be out here just like, holy shit, this is really good, you know?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I can so easily imagine ways it could have been carried off well, right? Like, I mean, because the reality is the quarterback position doesn't work out for most people. You know what I mean? Like, you're talking, like, you can count on two hands the number of people who are really superb at playing the position in the NFL. And most people, it turns out...
in the NFL. Like, actual pros, there are only a handful. There are only, like you said, two or three who are you can build a team around them.
Yeah. And then the vast majority, even people who are stars in college, never really like develop the instinct or insight into the game to like play it at the pro level and like react dynamically. And it's sad and it's frustrating, right? But like, it's the reality for a lot of guys. I could see that story beat working out really, really well, because this is what derails so many talents. But unfortunately, they set the bar for he basically doesn't understand how fucking team lines up.
Right. So I'll finish it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
If I have the time, I'll try to write about it, but I'm glad I got to have this moment.
Yeah, like, I think I'm still into it. That's the problem. Like, everything you said, like, those good moments and those beats, I'm like, but those do sound really good and different than a lot of what else I play.
Right, exactly. That's the other thing. It's like, it has just felt so unique and so different from literally everything else I spend time with, you know, as someone who plays a lot of games. Like, going from playing a lot of Need for Speed Payback over the weekend to playing that, going from something that was like desperate to figure out how to be bombastic to something that almost seemed to stumble into, but even that's not giving enough credit. Like, something that understood that the most powerful moments could be the quiet ones, could be a shot of you and your friend, like, sitting quietly at the side of the on the side of the road, you know, or like you wearing a hard hat and shoveling dirt on the old football field you used to play on when you were in high school. They're good high school football flashbacks. It's like that stuff works really well. Like there are shitty like local high school like or local radio play callers. Not play callers, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like radio announcers who are calling your football game in high school, and it's just like dudes from the town who talk about other people in the town and who like, oh yeah, well, you know, Ms. Murray came over the other night when she brought over a big potato stew, and it's like, this is the best, this is the best, this is all I want in games, is for Mrs. Murray to come over and bring the big potato stew over and to have that be the topic of conversation instead of the interception I just threw or whatever. It's very good. And I want more of that stuff, and so like, I don't know, it gives me hope. It feels like they realize that they should put a campaign mode in for me, you know, like,
yeah,
in the same way that Call of Duty has been for years. We also didn't even get a chance to talk about Call of Duty, but I need way more. I'm not ready to talk about Call of Duty yet. We should maybe do that Friday.
Sounds good.
We'll try to. In any case, I think I'm done talking about Madden. I'm done talking about Aliens. We're done talking about whatever the fake Fast and the Furious, the fake and the Furious. Yeah, that's probably gonna do it for us this week, Rob.
You should watch Pitch and Sugar. Those are my two suggestions.
Okay, I don't know what those are. What are those?
Pitch is, it was a Fox drama series about the first female pitcher in the major leagues in baseball. So it was like, she is a young black woman from the South who has worked her way into a starting position with the San Diego Padres. Mm-hmm. And it is just a surprise. Like, do they lean on sports movie tropes? Hell yes, they do. Do they also, like, is the show also, like, pretty smart and knowing about the standards that, like, women and like black athletes are subjected to, right, and how those right. interact in this one character. Absolutely. They also do a great job of like, oh God, what I love so much about that show is there's a tendency to excessively idealize the protagonist of a show like that. Cause you right. have to like prove like that they deserve this, right? That like, that they are worthy of the opportunity they are getting. And no, like the Ginny Baker character in the show is likable, warm, also really persnickety at times. You know what I mean? Like, has really believable and convincing flaws. Can get like right. really pigheaded and arrogant out of the blue because, damn it, this brought her this far. So who the hell are you to tell her, you know, to do something different now that she's gotten to the show? So I think you would dig that. And then just those moments you were talking about, the softer, like downbeat moments yeah. about like the sport. There is this amazing film called Sugar about this. I want to say it's basically about the pipeline and the farm system from the Dominican Republic to the National Leagues. And about the people who leak out of that pipeline.
Right.
It's so good.
All right. I will look into those for sure. Okay, that's going to do it for us this week. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
Awesome. You find everything we do at waypointadvice.com, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, and twitch.tv/waypoint. My throat is killing me. I've never really got over that sickness I've been battling on and off for the last week. And I didn't sleep last night because I was too caught up anxiously playing Madden, which is a weird thing for me to say.
So you need me to close this out.
I need you to. You know what? I'm going to do the Danielle. Shout out to Danielle, who is getting her wrist looked at. And I'm going to say, be good and be good at it. And then I need you to say something else.
Thanks to Boen for peace.
I hate this. Waypoint.zone/BOEN. Can I get another piece? Can I get.
Be good at it. Peace.
見えないでしょ。どこにいるのかな。目見えない。
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.